to look at. I can't imagine what you are expecting. a title. Yes. Yes. That sounded like a threat. Just to have the audacity to put something on the board like looking at stuff is one thing, but to have so many people show up, I think what the village philosopher had to say before the second setting was probably right. Ooh. Was that? Yes. It's the only game in town, so I got you now. Okay. Any questions? Are there? I always mean that very sincerely and seriously, but for some reason it's the biggest laugh of anything I say. And I think that the reason that it's so funny is because most of you are not used to asking questions and are therefore embarrassed by the possibility of having to do it. And I also think probably most of you feel that the question should come after a thing and not before, which means that you should probably ask some questions which are of interest to the guy who's doing the talking rather than which are of interest to you. And so I ask, in all sincerity, if there are any questions about looking at stuff. Now, don't get me off on something outside of my area of expertise, which is very narrow, and I can always plead ignorance and do, but if you have any questions about looking at stuff, I don't know. I collected a bunch of stuff and put it in the projectors, and I got three projectors full of stuff, and I am hoping that maybe combinations of things will be of interest, but I really have the stuff there with the intention of helping us ask questions about how we see. If you go down there and tell them to stop bowling, I will save your seat. You want something done around here, send a Swihart, boy. I'd... Huh? Yeah. Oh, no, don't look at that. Okay. Yeah. Well, no. I don't have a particular way. In fact, I think it would be nice if you looked at things, and it's not my stuff. It's stuff that will, you're not going to look at any of my stuff. You're just going to look at stuff in general. One or two of those may be my stuff, but it's out of the whole percentage, it's pretty small, and I won't tell you when it comes on, but, which will be embarrassing for both of us. But it's just the reaction of things, and I think most of us really have trouble thinking with our eyes, and that's, I'm just going to be asking questions about the stuff so that maybe there are some unusual ways of seeing things that you never thought of before, and that happens to me every day. Every day, there's always, up here, it doesn't happen every day at Valparaiso, but it sure happens every day up here. And that's because, you get used to where you are, and here is a special kind of place, and all of a sudden, new things. It just dawned on me today that we have a whole new word in the Holden vocabulary, and it may be useful when you get down the hill, but I have never heard it. Do any of you know what a mample is? A mample? We sing it. We sang it this evening. We sang it this evening. It was mample is when you're not sure whether you should say people or mankind. Bless all mample. forever. And if you don't know what a mampool is, then you're saying a prayer that is rather irreverent. You better know. And knowing is really, knowing is the root of seeing. Knowing is the root of seeing. And so we want to find out what you know. Not what I know, but what you know about some of the stuff we're going to look at. Karen? That question assumes that I am not stuff. And after a meal like that, the longer we keep the lights on, the better. Because when we turn the lights out, I'm going to lose most of you. Yeah, philosopher. As a visual person, all I can say is that that's easy for you to say, but not for me. I have a hard enough time concentrating on what I'm supposed to, and I better turn out the lights before Karin gets mad. Oh, shut up. Aren't you glad you came? Okay. Karin got me so excited just within the last couple days talking about stars, and I guess I wanted to it was a new thing for me to see. I'm not a star person. I'm not really very oriented to the natural phenomenon of things. That's not my background. And so when I learn just a few things about stars, they get me, or about anything. Mary had me sucking on a honeysuckle. I finally realized what a honeysuckle was for yesterday for the first time in my life. I just couldn't come up with a picture of a honeysuckle, but that's part of the way I see honeysuckles now, if I can just keep my hands off of them, so we have some around. But that's really neat, and oh, were they sweet. And the star thing was just amazing. Was just flipping through an astronomy magazine, and there was a picture very similar to this. And it said that there were about 100,000 stars in this one picture. Now, if you wanted to take pictures of all of the stars in our galaxy, we would have to show you right now 10 million of these pictures. 10 million of these pictures, and that's just for our galaxy. And the next time you look up at the Big Dipper, try to imagine that there are, and we're not quite sure whether it's 1 million or 10 million, but there are between 1 million and 10 million galaxies in the spoon of the Big Dipper, just in the Dipper part, which is like between 1 million and 10 million times 10 million of these pictures to give you a view of just an infinitesimal part of what there is to look at. Now, if you understand that, and I certainly don't, I mean, I think someone very wise said that if you looked up and saw just one, I don't think that's a star. I think that's Jupiter, isn't it? Not quite sure. I'm not a star person, but I know what I like. But you just looked up there one night and saw just one, that would be enough to convince you of the presence of an almighty being, an all-powerful God. But no! 10 million times 10 million! The skies are overpopulated, and sometimes they fall. And it isn't just a matter of, and this is a slide of Karin's, it isn't just a matter of looking and saying that is a star falling. But for everything we see, there is a context. There is a way of seeing. Sometimes those ways are very personal, very individual. I am want to use, I don't know why, but use the example that if we ran into a tree going 40 miles an hour, that we would look at trees differently from that point on. Probably all trees. We would look at cars differently. Sometimes we have to even treat folks who have gone through the trauma of accidents so that their vision can somehow get calmed down to a reasonable pace. There was a whole time in the age of man when they could look up at one of those things, those comets coming out of the sky, and were convinced of a couple of horrible things, like that was the devil, and that's the devil's tail, or that was a sign of the imminent coming of Judgment Day. So that how you look at things is really sheltered by a whole variety of contexts. And you have to understand these contexts as not necessarily being art contexts, but being all kinds of things. So the next time you look up, sometime coming off of the peak of Buckskin, you can see Orion up there dancing. Well, knowing that that's Orion gives you a way of looking at a particular part of the heaven that you can't take advantage of unless there is some knowing that goes with the seeing. Well, yeah, I love to show pictures like this because usually after every show, people say, you know, did you take those? And I say yes, but I don't explain how. Because there's something magic about being able to float around from a skyhook and take pictures of the Earth from great distances away with your little brownie Instamatic. which is what I got. Yeah. And it looks so neat. It looks so neat from there. It looks so clean. And everything is sort of in its place. Buckminster Fuller calls it a spaceship. And you get closer and closer and closer to it. And pretty soon you get an idea of what the Earth looks like from your particular perspective. And it looks unusual and different. It's not that kind of thing at all. Those of you that come to this place in the summer can expect, you know, maybe to do some dancing out on the lawn. That's a salty dog. You should have had a salty dog lesson from Sarah and Al Pitcher, and then you would know what salty dog is all about. It's just kind of incredible. And do it in the bare feet out on the lawn. But there is also another winter community, and so the context of that kind of thing shapes the sort of place it is for us, each of us seeing this place, each of us seeing any place in light of their experience with it. This is not just an emotional fact. It is a physiological fact. Your eye does not accept on a one-to-one basis, but there is constant interpretation. So the earth. And how you look at things, small things and great things, can really be a personal, inventive, and kind of art experience. I think of little children, for example, that look at things with cantilever projection. Have you ever watched little kids looking at worms crawling through the mud with their little behinders? You know, they're on both feet, but their little behinders go straight out, and they just sit there and look. Just try and do that sometimes. And they can look for hours at little wormy things crawling around and little bugs, and they get very fascinated with things like that. And maybe we don't get enough fascinated to look at texture and small stuff, elegant little things. Wheat. I can show you a particular element like that, like chaff on the ground, or show it to you like that. Same thing. Or we could put it in a context. Let's stick it in a completely different context and see if you read it differently. If I ask you to identify what it is, it's wheat. And it's light, or it's grasses and light. Now what is it? Now it's like body and blood. And it takes on all kinds, or it's like body and blood for some of us. Maybe not for all. But there is a changing context for a particular simple thing that can tell us something about the incarnation, but you gotta see it. And you gotta see it with your own eyes before you can know it. Oh. Ho ho. What is that? It's a flower. It's coming out of a dead stump. And we can look at that as kind of a phenomenon of nature, or let's look at it in a different light. Now, just putting it in that context, and we can put it into a variety of contexts, but with that one, it becomes a whole history, the genealogy of Christ, the tree of Jesse, a root out of dry ground, a life out of death, except a grain of wheat fall into the ground and die. It cannot bring forth fruit. And all of a sudden, the looking takes on a special kind of meaning. Let's keep a meaning and add a few more images. What is it? Now what is butterfly? Easter. It's Easter. It's resurrection. Now what is it? Beautiful Savior, King of creation. Something like that, maybe. I don't know. I don't know where you're coming from. All I can tell you is what goes on with my eyes and with my experience and knowing. I am just simply telling you that everything you see is hooked up to a special kind of knowing which identifies who you are. And I think that's super exciting. Whoop. I don't know what that is. I thought when I first put it in there that it was a rainbow, but a rainbow does not have a black line across the bottom of it.
So what is it? A shoreline? The other side of the water? It doesn't matter, because there's that other thing juxtaposed with it, sitting right on top of it, and it makes it promise, hope, joyful stuff, and all accessible to our eyes. Oh, I don't think I want those two together. Context for text. I'll bet you any other year you would drive right past this place, but not this year. Not this year. This is a scary place, but boy, you're driving across South Dakota, and there is no light except for zillions of miles, and the old needle is on E. And this light shines with a glory. It's like an oasis. It's a, you are three wise men in your little Volkswagen, and you're heading for that guiding star. Because there is gas, and it is open. Ta-da! Open. What a word. What a word. More meaning to that word than there has ever been before. Open. Ooh. It's like what used to be Ame Mare Pare Om. Now you just say open, and it sets all kinds of things tingling in your insides. Shut. That's an aggressive word. Is that a bad word? Closed. Empty. Out of business. Really aggressive, hard, angry words. Open. It's a beautiful word. It's gentle. It's inviting. It's got gas. Okay. All kinds of contexts. Let me give you a context for looking at this. Now just look at it. You got it in your mind. We got blue and green. Close your eyes. Anybody who does not close his eyes is a narc. So close your eyes. Now just close them. Now listen. Listen. Listen, kid. What do you see? You're seeing with your mind. You're seeing stuff with your heart. Some of you aren't seeing anything. You're asleep. But those of you that are awake, meadows, a little brook, a little tiny stream, little stream getting bigger, bubbly. It's running music. This is barefoot music, if I ever heard it. This is an invitation to a maypole. Open. Doesn't have to be one thing. But if I showed you the slums of South Chicago while you were listening to that music, you'd be offended. Something wouldn't be right. And we can make music and we can make images with just the way our insides feel. Make music. Give me a song for this image. Anybody know a song?
Dark Town Strutters Ball.
Reaction to Dark Town Strutters Ball for this image, folks. No? The name of the painting is Early Sunday Morning. When is Dark Town Strutters Ball? Saturday night? I don't know. Could be. Who knows where she lives? Could be Sunday morning. There's a song. I don't know the song very well, but there is a song every time I think of this. Every time I see this image, I think of it. And it's called Sunday Morning Sidewalks. Gordon Lightfoot. Somehow behind the walls you can smell fried chicken. But all the stores are closed. That's the way it was, folks. Some of you may not remember when Sunday mornings were like this. Now they got the malls and all the stores are open and everybody's walking past and buying things and things are for sale and it's as busy as it is every other day. But it used to be Sunday morning quiet. So memory is an orientation. What is this a picture of? Oh, they are all pictures of stuff. What kind of stuff is this a picture of? Anybody? Can you make it out? Water? Notre Dame? Rams? A specific Notre Dame? Well, you're getting close. I bet those of you that say Rams and Notre Dame are familiar with the artist, huh? Monet? It's actually Rouen Cathedral, but Rams is close enough. Same general vicinity. Now maybe a setting for understanding this particular kind of image might be other images. Monet is one of my crazy friends. He would go out at 8 o'clock in the morning and put his canvas up on his easel and he'd paint an 8 o'clock in the morning painting and he'd paint from 8 to 8:30. Then the light would change. Boy, could this guy see light. And at 8:30, he'd get out his 8:30 canvas and he'd paint for a half an hour and then his 9 o'clock and his 9:30 and his 10 o'clock and he'd wind up with 16 paintings of the front of the same building, one half an hour after the other. Light, light, light. Nobody really cares about the cathedral. It's just about how light bounces off of it. And if you knew that, if you had maybe seen some of the other images, then a totally abstract blob of, you're right, stuff would have wound up to be light bouncing off of stone. The relationship of seeing and knowing, very, very important. And then along comes pop art and does the same thing. Do you love this? That's the front of Rouen Cathedral by Klaus Oldenburg, a pop artist. And he did it exactly as Monet did it if he had been in the printing business. So you can see all the little dots that the printing press would make. Toledo, by another one of my crazy friends, Domenico Theodocopoli, called El Greco, for obvious reasons. With a name like that, you gotta shorten it. The Greek. And he paints a view of Toledo. But this is the last of a series. All the other ones had great crucifixes in the middle of it. And the more he painted the view of Toledo, Spain, the smaller the crucifix got and the larger the view of his city got. Until finally he does a painting of a crucifixion with no crucifixion. This is what Bernard Berenson called the first Christian landscape. As though just to the left or to the right is the crucifixion, the death of God, and somewhere in that city there is a temple, and the veil is being torn from the top to the bottom, and in the next instant the graves will open up and give up their dead. But only if you understand the context out of which this comes. Otherwise, it's a broody guy looking at his city. That's one way. History will give you another way. A lot of us want realism with art. And I say a little realism goes an awful long way. How'd you like that painting over your mantle? That's real. That's a painting. We all know what it represents, what it's a part of, but it's a painting. What's the difference between this and the real thing? Ooh, now that's a little scary. Because now the artist is making objects which are no different than the objects that they are to represent. Now you want real. This is real. American flags should all be done by little flag manufacturers, little factory things. They should come with little grommets in it so we can put the little rope through the holes and raise it up like that. This is not the American flag. This is a painting. That's heavy. That's kind of spooky. If there is no difference between art and representation and the thing it represents, then we're in trouble. Because then, either everything is art, or nothing is art. Now, I don't care if everything is art, but if nothing is art, I'm out of business. You know, what is that if it ain't fresh? Well, if it isn't art, and if art isn't possible, then a lot of folks are out of the seeing business. And it is a business. Somebody said about Manet, he was just an eye. But what an eye. That's neat. Artists are people who see and who share how they see based on what they know. That's real. Do you love that? Do you love it? You bump into that all the time. It's in the funny papers. It's Sunday morning. You talk about real, folks. It gets a little scary. You know what goes on television, on in the afternoons? Every now and then I come home in the afternoon and I'm designing away and I get kind of groggy, so I turn on the television. Oh, is that real? I mean, is that funny real? It's the soaps. And you wonder why people look at those things, except I guess the only reason I can think of it is that it really makes you feel good after they're turned off. I mean, you know, it's good to know that this gal is going through all kinds of problems. She's on trial for murder. She's expecting a baby who is not going to be well-formed after it emerges. She isn't married, of course. And she's got all kinds of people moving in on her who are criminals and perverts and all sorts of stuff. It's all happening at once. And you can do your dishes and take care of your kids knowing that somewhere in the world somebody's got it worse than you do. And does that feel good? And Lichtenstein comes along and says, let's make art out of that. The artists are not born 100 years before their time. They're born smack into the middle of it. Right smack into the middle. And they hold up all the stuff that we are about in front of our eyes. And we say, is that art? And the answer is, it is us. It's us. We're just not in the business of seeing it. Jackson Pollock, everybody's crazy friend, King of the Drip and Drool School. Poked holes in the bottom of cans of Duco enamel and swung them from a ladder all over the canvas. And when somebody said, "What is it?" he said, "It is," which is a smart aleck answer if there ever was one. Makes you want to hit the guy right upside the head. It is. What he was trying to tell us, though, is that it doesn't refer to anything else. When you ask, "What is it?" you are saying, "To what else does it refer?" Now, a little practice with paintings will help you get along with all kinds of things, like people, villages, flowers, little fawns in the woods, little mice on your cracker. And you look, somebody gets off the bus, and you welcome them to the village, except they don't look like anybody you have ever seen before. And so you say, "You can't be a person. You don't remind me of any other person. You don't refer with your being to anybody else I have ever known." That eliminates your personness. "This village does not remind me of any place I have ever been in the world. It must not be a place. That flower has its legitimacy because it reminds me of all other flowers. Liz, the woman I love, is a woman because she reminds me of all the other women I have ever known." Well, how absurd. How absolutely absurd. In your everyday experiences, what you look for, what you demand, what we thrive on is the uniqueness of each image that confronts us. And we celebrate them as one of a kind but one, unique, no other like it, no duplicates. Any duplicates, we call them forgeries, and we get confused. And so we can look at a Pollock and say, "You are a painting," and "Jackson, you are a painter." So many different kinds of images. It's hard to know what to look for. Was Gauguin painting a little wayside shrine, or was he painting the actual crucifixion? Well, that doesn't look like any Jesus I ever saw. And that doesn't look like any Golgotha I ever visited. But more and more, we try and confront one another with the fact of the death of God, not just the visual likeness. Just stop and think, folks, what it would be like to duplicate Golgotha in its most visually representational. Just bring him back for one more day. Set the scene. Put the vertical post in the hill. Have him drag that crossbeam up the hill. Nail him onto it. And then see what kind of an effect we could duplicate. You got the crowds milling around. You got the stench, the smell. You got people jeering, "His blood be on us and our children," or whatever they were hollering. Jesus up there saying something to one guy on one side and then saying something to another guy on another. "If you be the Son of God, come down, save us and yourself." All those things happening simultaneously, one on top of the other. If that scene were duplicated exactly as it happened, none of us would have the effect that we get from reading Scripture. Scripture does not duplicate the event.
It picks out. Can you imagine sitting there in a milling throng and all of a sudden hearing the centurion say, "Surely this must be the Son of God"? No way! No way! That statement was pulled out of a context of a tremendously confused moment in history. And it was held before us as very significant. So the truth is not always duplication. The truth is how it is sieved through the emotions, through the feelings, and through the eyes. This crucifixion, made up of just all the articles on the front page of one Sunday morning's issue of the Chicago Sun-Times. Reality. Visual reality. You want it real, right? You want it the way it actually is. And so I say, I'm going to get somebody here I'm going to put down on a seat in front of me, and I'm going to say, "Hold it, just hold it," and I am going to draw. I want to draw her so bad. And I'm going to say, "Can I just, you know, have 5 minutes so I can sketch you?" And the only way that's going to happen is if she sets down, because she is moving from one place to another. Everything is moving from one place to another. The clouds are moving. The weather's moving. All of us are moving all over the place. And when the artist gets in front of us and says, "I want to do a picture of this," the first thing he says is, "Now hold it." And that's not real. That's not real. So there are a bunch of artists that try and capture for us motion, how things look when they are constantly moving. If I were to take that hummingbird and paint each feather, each wing exactly as it is, that would be a lie. It would not be the truth, because that is not what we see. That is only what we know. And those are two different kinds of reality. You gotta choose. Oh, I guess when I see that thing over there on your left, I think of all the people who work in government agencies. There are people who know what kind of life that is. Can you imagine Al Swihart working in there? Oh, gee. Eileen goes all over the village and plants flowers. She works for the government. I think she comes up here to plant flowers. Maybe to get away from cages, although her job sounds really neat. Really super stuff. But is that scary? And how much of that? Wow, this thing. The computer is on rockers. Well, we know computers aren't on rockers, but there are some things we know about how people treat computers. You go downtown Chicago at 2 o'clock in the morning, and there are lights on in those buildings, and you know nobody's working in there. The lights are on to keep the computers warm. Oh, yeah. I mean, somebody who runs that computer gets really, really sick, and they say, "Take the day off," but the computer gets overheated. And they call specialists in with little black bags, and they come running up there, and they listen to the computer with a stethoscope. And they say, "Are you okay, baby?" You know. And at the end of the day, the people that run the computers go home to their little ticky-tacky boxes, and they watch junk on the tube, and they eat Cheerios and rotten food. I'm a Twinkie freak myself. And those computers are down there in multi-million dollar establishments being fondled over and petted. And the artist has just taken one and put it in an easy chair. You do right by your computer, and your computer will do right by you. Do not fold, bend, spindle, or mutilate. Don't you want to just take one of them and punch holes in it? Send it back and give the computer fits? We're used to it. We're used to it. A scream by the artist Munch, and eventually everything screams, even the landscape. Four little girls having an outing on a bridge, and they are screaming. The landscape is screaming because Munch is screaming. We are looking at an extension of the artist. You're looking at an artist's baby, and sometimes it hurts. A lot of it is what we know, but it is shared by what the artist knows and what the artist knows about himself, which can often be very scary. Oh boy, what we see is so important. The kind of face you make at somebody, the kind of gesture, will let you know whether you care or you don't care, whether you love or you hate, and it all goes through the eye. It all goes through the eyes and wraps itself around somebody's heart and somebody's knowing. And somebody can scream, help, or peace, please. I took that off of a desk after a class, and I don't know who wrote it, and it scares the daylights out of me because that student left the room, and I can't find him anywhere. And he is screaming for peace and screaming for help, and who knows, he may be screaming to this very day. But sometime you can take all the things we are, all of our hurts, all the purple stuff, all of the anguish, all of the draft cards, credit cards, Dear John letters, all of the hate, the anger, the love, the beauty, and you can hang it on the cross. You can do that in a visual way and say, peace, please. Help, sir, Lord, please. As simple as that. And make it a thing that people can see and people in their knowing can share with one another, which is the ultimate art. Thank you.